how did you guys just come up with the idea, like, all right, we're going to start a national video game museum? What is that process like?
I can answer that, or Joe can answer it. That's a pretty big question. A little bit of history about ourselves. We started out as really just, you know, average collectors, but we were collecting at a time when nobody else was collecting. So we're able to build collections or archives that you couldn't possibly build in the environment today. About 25 years ago, myself and my partner Joe, who's on with us, and John Hardy, who's not on with us, we were really just pen pals in a lot of ways, communicating back and forth through mail before there was any sort of internet. And,
wow.
Just, you know, talking about the different items that we picked up and trading things and things like that. A few years after that, Joe decided that you know, there needed to be a book. There needed to be some way to determine what games are rare, what games aren't rare. And Joe wrote the first Digital Press Collectors Guide, which, you know, kind of put together a list of every game made for every system. And John and I helped with certain sections of that. And Joe, I think, how many editions of that book did you do? Six or seven?
Yeah, it was seven by the time we stopped and let the internet take over.
And Joe's guide for the longest time. Joe's was the Beckett of video game code collecting.
Wow.
This was before the proliferation of the internet. You know, when mm-hmm. people actually needed print guides to do that sort of thing. But it's not really a question of, you know, why did we start to or why did we decide to make a video game museum? You know, why not? You know, we had been putting this stuff together and we had been preserving it for years on our own. And in 1999, we founded our own show called Classic Game Expo in Las Vegas, and we ran that show for 15 years. We were one of the very first cons, so to speak, to bring together video game collectors. And the big thing about our show was we also sought out to bring in a lot of the pioneers who created the games and the consoles back in the day, because, you know, back at that time, none of those guys were credited for it, and they were all kept kind of hidden in secret. So we kind of brought the collectors together with hundreds of those peoples over the course of 15 years. And 2009, we decided that, you know, our show wasn't enough anymore, and we needed to make a formal institution that people would be able to see all the types of things that were in our show over the years. And we made the Video Game History Museum 501c3 nonprofit organization with the goal of creating a museum, and here we are.
Like Sean said, we've been running that Classic Game Expo since 1999, but it was once a year, and sometimes even we would skip years, and that is where we started showing off our museum stuff. We actually had a whole section of that expo that was partitioned off to be the museum.
Wow.
And what kind of put the bug in our ear to settle down was we had people come in to us that we'd only see once a year or every other year and say, why don't you guys find a place where we can see this any day of the year? So that kind of set us down this path.
So let me just clear this up for people that are listening and don't, you know, quite get where we're at so far. This museum is basically a cavalcade of your collections. It's like,
yeah,
all of your cool stuff in one place.
I don't really like us to be referred to as collectors. We're collectors to a power of 10. You know, it's not, anyway, there are, you know, tens of thousands of collectors out there. By far, between the three of us, we have the largest collection of video game hardware, software, memorabilia, documentation in the world. No, nobody comes close to us. We have dozens of one-of-a-kind items. We have scores of items that there are fewer than 10 in the world in our archives. So,
yeah, and we...
I'm sorry.
The other thing that kind of separates us from collectors is because we've had so much contact with the industry over the last 15 to 20 years, they've been, you know, we've been on that to make sure that the stuff gets preserved. So a lot of the things that we've gotten were not gained through ordinary channels. You know, we're not on eBay picking things up. We're getting a lot of this stuff handed off to us by the guys that were responsible for designing it.
Absolutely.
What do you think is the bottom line why someone should come to this museum? Like, let's just say you're someone that's played, you know, Mario a couple of times in your life, and you're kind of not the biggest gamer. Why should they come?
we're trying to hit every possible facet of gamer, from the most casual to the most hardcore. And we believe that there's something here for all of those levels of people. Because if you're the kind of person that just played Mario a couple of times and has a sort of a, you know, far away perspective to what video gaming really is, we want you to come to learn where it came from, how important it is in our culture, how much more there is that you probably haven't seen or knew. And then on the other end of it, the hardcore people, we're trying to appeal to them, not only to immerse them in the gaming of the last 30 years, but also to teach them that here's the things that you think you know it all. I bet you we can stump you. I bet you that there's some things here that you're going to learn. I bet you you're going to get a chance to touch something or play something that you either didn't know existed or certainly never were able to put your hands on. So that level of interactivity and also being able to sort of educate people at every level kind of makes this a museum that's going to be fun for anybody at any level of gaining, hardcoreness.
It's not. I mean, although there is a ton of interactivity and opportunities to actually play games in the museum, a big part of what we're trying to do there is kind of lose the stigma of video games. It's not just about fun and games or playing Call of Duty for 17 hours a day, 6 days a week. It's we want to show people that, you know, there's a lot more to making a video game, or a lot more behind the video games than what you see in on the shelves in your local Best Buy or independent video game store. This is about how video games are made, and this is about introducing people to options as far as careers are concerned. You know, we have a pretty good relationship with SMU, which is the only university in the country that offers a master's degree in video game design, and they're going to be contributing curriculum to us to use in our classroom in the museum, and run little workshops and show kids how to build this or how to build that or how to write a simple game program in a couple of days. And believe me, playing games is a huge part of our museum, but you know, we also want people to understand that, you know, it's not just about playing games. There's a lot more to video games than just playing them.
For hardcore gamers, it's usually the stories behind the games or the consoles that are things that get told over and over and over again. So like the origins of the Sony PlayStation, how it was once a, you know, a Nintendo co-venture, or, you know, the story behind E.T. For Atari 2600. How well do you guys kind of tell those stories behind the games?
It's funny that you should use the word story, because that's the one that I keep using when I explain what we're doing here. It's not just a collection of things. It's not a wing that shows you everything Nintendo's got, or a place where all you see are Sonic items. Because we have a space that's somewhat limited, like Sean said, we have a massive collection that could never possibly fit into 10,000 square feet. So we had to make decisions about what is it we want people to get when they come out here. So we've chosen 17 different stories, each of those something that we feel is very impactful on gamers and the culture. And, you know, that the whole point of this is that you're sprawling into it, not just to see a whole bunch of things lined up, which you'll see anyway, but to be able to walk away from each one of those having learned something. So is that story of E.T. overdone? Probably. I think everyone's heard some piece of it, but we do have a little section of that E.T. story embedded in a much bigger story of how the whole industry crashed. So there, well, those are the important ones, but we've got some pretty interesting and unique stories to tell.
That was our life's work, so to speak, as we were doing Classic Gaming Expo all of those years, is to track down people like Howard Warshaw, who wrote E.T. We have what we call a Pioneers database, which has, you know, thousands of people that we found over the years and spoken to and heard the stories firsthand. So when some kid comes in and points to the E.T. cartridge on the wall there and tells all his friends how that game
single-handedly killed the video game industry in 83, 84, we want to be able to tell them, man, dude, no, that's really not true at all. Mm-hmm. And yes, it wasn't the best game, but there's a whole lot more to that story. Like Joe said, there's a whole lot more to that story than just a bad cartridge. Mm-hmm. And how many games have you played on Xbox or PlayStation or you know, that are 10 times worse than E3? I know I've played them. They're mm-hmm. just really, really bad games. But those games didn't single-handedly tear down the video game industry. And in fact, in my opinion, there's a lot of games today that if that were possible, the video game industry would have been dead a long time ago, because there's some really bad games out there. It's a different environment now, with a lot more people playing games than they were in 83, 84. But there's so much more to the story. And We're the guys that have been investigating those misconceptions for 25 years. So it's going to be really, really a great opportunity for us to kind of debunk some of these misconceptions or myths that people have, and tell the real story.
How do you guys get people to come multiple times over multiple years? How do you do that?
Well, content is a big part of that. Like I said, we've got way more than we can fit into this space. So in each one of these spaces, our goal is to continuously rotate the content. So you may be in a exhibit that's telling you the story about how third-party companies have helped evolve the industry. And you might come in January and see how Activision revolutionized the Atari era, or Magic, revolutionized it. And then you may come back 3 months later and discover how, Gearbox succeeded with the title like Borderlands that came out of nowhere and helped promote the Xbox 360 success. The idea is that we have way more than we're able to display at one time. So it's simply a matter of just continuously rotating the story so that we're telling it from kind of a fresh perspective every 3 to 6 months.
One of the good vehicles for that in the museum is going to be what we're calling the head-to-head hall, and basically it's about a 30 foot long countertop, and it has stools mounted up against it where we have set up 10 different consoles for people to play, and those consoles are going to change constantly. We may run an exhibit for a few weeks where we're going to do 10 Xboxes and play head-to-head original Halo on there. Or you may do Frogger on every video game console that was ever released for it, set them all up on those consoles. And those are going to be running for, three weeks at a time, where people are just going to come up and be able to sit down and play those games over and over again. And it's part of the admission price. Hang out, play some games. We're going to run tournaments on there.
That's great.
We're going to recreate the Nintendo World Championship in there and get some through our relationship with some of these other companies, and we'll get Nintendo to put up some big prizes, new game consoles or a selection of new games and things like that. So there's going to be a lot going on that changes in there constantly. We just got off another conference call about 15 minutes ago where we're talking about our Easter egg exhibit, where within the museum itself there are dozens and dozens of little Easter eggs that people have to come in and sign up on a kiosk and try and collect all of these Easter eggs. And there's tons of stuff that's going to be changing.
So a lot of museums are synonymous with their souvenir shops, the things that you could kind of buy in there to kind of remember your adventure there. What do you guys have anything special in your souvenir shop to kind of have a kid that they like a little knickknack they could put on their shelf to like remember their experience there?
Yeah, we do have a gift shop in the museum. It's just outside of the arcade. We have several different ideas that we're gonna have in there. Of course, simple branded merchandise like T-shirts and mugs and things like that. But we have a lot of other things too. One of the examples is a couple of years ago, Sega donated a bunch of promotional materials that they had purchased too many of to our organization. So we have Sonic the Hedgehog pins that you can't really buy anywhere else. We have Mylar balloons from them that you can't really buy anywhere else. We've got a lot of different things in there. But we're thinking about doing a commemorative token, a yearly commemorative token that
I guess they don't even call the big ones tokens. John calls them a coin. My partner John is heading up this part of it. But these big medallion kind of coins. We're thinking about doing one of those, like an inaugural coin, and a new one every year that people can collect as they come in. We have our token that we made for. We have inside the museum space. We built a vintage 80s arcade, complete with black lights and neon, and it really looks awesome. I can't wait for people to see that arcade. But we have our own custom token made with our mascot on it and the name of the arcade. So people, we assume, will collect those. We're going to make a box set of those tokens. There's the opportunity, the different things that we can do with the gift shop are pretty endless. And Joe and I both have retail experience in that we own vintage game stores, so we've got a lot of experience in that regard. So the gift shop is going to rock, needless to say.
Do you guys plan on commemorating the releases of big games, say, like, a new Pokemon game or a new, Call of Duty or something like that, like kind of like celebrating those launch events at the museum in one way or another?
Yeah, part of the flexibility that we built into our layout is we call flex visits, and there's spaces that are intentionally left without a specific story to tell so that we can change them on the fly as needed. So, for example, we've got Sonic the Hedgehog's 25th anniversary coming up, and we're already starting to prepare for that. We're not even open yet. We're already preparing to build a flex visit. But that's a big part of what we're doing. We want to have companies be able to come to us and say, surely you guys have all of the John Madden football games across all the platforms over the years. If you could do some kind of a commemorative event or a corporate sponsored event, is that something you can do? We always want to be able to say yes to that. So we've got space pretty much earmarked for exactly that sort of thing.